And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. And we should have on the line with us Eve Engler. Let's see if we have Eve. Eve, are you there with us?
I'm here, Brendan.
Wonderful. We have you. I know we've caught you on a cell phone here. You are involved in your book tour for your latest book, Canada and Israel, Building Apartheid. And I know you've been going across Canada, actually, through Quebec, through Ontario. Where are you located right now?
I'm, I think, 20 or so minutes from Edmonton on a bus.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah, you're not too far from where Ann Coulter was speaking, I guess, a few weeks ago. Hopefully you get a very good reception in Western Canada. I know that I've been getting radio interviews and book reviews and whatnot from your book already from the places you've already been. So it's causing quite a stir. And I know there's going to be people in Hamilton that are interested in it as well. So we're very glad that you could take time to be with us. We've interviewed you about a number of topics, and you've explored Canada's foreign policy in a number of ways in the past. Together with Anthony Fenton, you looked at Canada's role in Haiti, and then you wrote about Canada supporting colonial and imperial policies abroad. That was the Black Book of Canada, which is still reverberating. It's still new to so many people, and you're reading new reviews and new articles about it all the time, but you're so prolific, you've come up with another book, this one about Canadian policy on Israel. So I'm just wondering, what made you decide that you had enough material or there's enough interest that you can write a book right now about Canadian policy towards Israel?
Well, pretty early on in researching the Black Book of Canadian Foreign Policy, I realized there was lots of material, lots of information I was coming across regarding the history of Canadian support for Zionism, Canada's one-sided support for Israel, despite the consequences for Palestinians. And so early on in researching the Black Book, I decided that there was a need for a follow-up. And there's a series of books about Canada-Israel relations, but they're all from a very pro-Zionist or pro-Israel perspective. And so I thought it was necessary to write an account of Canada's support for Zionism's ongoing dispossession of Palestinians.
Exactly. You know, I guess that's the overall issue here, the overall message. And I'm just wondering, given that you've written a book focusing on the subject, what would you say are some of the main ways in which Canada as a government is specifically complicit in endorsing the dispossession of Palestinians or any other illegal actions that Israel does?
Well, today there's a whole series of ways that don't get a whole lot of discussion. So, for instance, CSIS, the Canadian spy agency, has close relations with Mossad. Israeli agents have often used Canadian passports when carrying out foreign assassination missions, and that's usually with a sort of tacit blind turning of Canadian officials turning a blind eye. The role of the different Canadian charities that are registered Canadian charities that operate in the occupied territories support the settlements, so the Canadian taxpayer, through charitable status, is actually subsidizing millions of dollars of Israel's actions in the illegally occupied West Bank. Things like the Canada-Israel Free Trade Agreement, which basically accepts Israeli goods produced in the occupied territories entering Canada tariff-free, so it's sort of a tacit endorsement of Israel's post-1967 occupation of Palestinian land. So those are some of the ways in which Canada has been long-standing for the past few decades supporting Israel's basically theft of Palestinian land or dispossession.
Yeah, you mentioned.
But there's also a whole series of ways in which the Harper government has made that more extreme.
Yeah, because what struck me is I just read this morning that there's a stamp that came out commemorating, you know, decades of cooperation between Canada and Israel. It seems that these initiatives have really taken off, or these efforts have taken off under the Harper government itself.
Yes, Stephen Harper has taken the long-standing six decades of one-sided Canadian support for Israel, and he's taken that to a whole new extreme. So you have really the culmination of that six decades of one-sided support in terms of the Harper government making Canada the most pro-Israel country in the world, at least after Israel. This recent thing about creating a joint Canada-Israel stamp, I believe it's the the third or fourth country that Canada has had a joint stamp with. It's really a part of this symbolic, really over the top, quite frankly, Canadian support for Israel under the Harper government, and that obviously includes in recent phase the attacks and against a whole number of groups from Kairos to Alternatives to Rights and Democracy that have in any way shown any inclination towards the Palestinian cause. That's reflected in the Harper government's position on the bombing of Lebanon in the summer of 2006. Obviously, the destruction of Gaza 14 months ago in Israel's 22-day bombing campaign of Gaza left 1,400 people dead, where Harper came very explicitly to Israel's defense, and Canada joining things like the Gaza Counter-Arms Smuggling Initiative, which is designed, you know, Canada basically trying to, joining this Counter-Arms Smuggling Initiative as a way to block supposed weapons or machine guns or small rockets or maybe food coming in from Syria or Iran or other countries to the Palestinian Authority in Gaza, but at the same time, obviously, this Counter-Arms Smuggling Initiative is not designed to stop Israeli F-16s or tanks from entering Gaza. So you really have the Harper government in all facets using Canadian aid money explicitly to support the Palestinian political factions most amenable to Israel's occupation, to build a security force to combat the rise of Hamas. You really have a Harper government just on all levels taking an incredibly extreme position vis-a-vis its support for Israel.
Eve, it's Peter Leibovich. How are you doing?
Not bad. Yourself?
Pretty good. It's been a while since we talked. The question of the Harper government and, you know, their overt endorsement of Israeli policies, which they're not hiding, obviously they symbolized to the whole world what they were going to stand for when they were the first government to withdraw all aid for the elected government in Palestine when Hamas won the election. But in your book, you talk about the history of the relationship. The liberals, their role tends to be a little murkier because on one hand they parade around as if they had a balance. Foreign policy, but on the other hand, they've allowed the Israelis basically free hand over the last while they were in government, and it's for Canadians there seems to be on the liberal position some sort of confusion, because on one hand they sort of have a base that says, well, you know, we want neutrality in the Middle East. We should have a balanced hand. But wasn't the liberals started leading in this direction of overt, more open and overt support to the Canadian to the Israeli government, even in their votes in the United Nations before Harper won his election?
For sure, the Paul Martin government moved Canada in a much closer towards Israel in terms of voting against a number of United Nations resolutions critical of Israel's occupation. And I think that historically, going back further, Lester Pearson, of course, a liberal prime minister and preeminent foreign policy maker in a number of Canadian governments, liberal governments, he was an ardent supporter of Zionism, Israeli policy, and despite the consequences for Palestinians, played a very important role in the United Nations, 1947 United Nations negotiations in support of the Zionist cause, with very little concern about the interests of the indigenous Palestinian population. Certainly Trudeau and Chrétien were a little bit less supportive of Israeli policy than previous governments, but it was still very clearly one-sided advocates of Israel. During all these periods, Canada was among the most pro-Israel countries in the world, providing significant diplomatic support, long-standing support of the UN, aid money in terms of private donations being subsidized by the Canadian taxpayer, weapon sales to Israel between 1950 and 1956 is an entire 150-page thesis about these weapon sales. So the idea that that it's just Harper that's made Canada, sort of no longer an honest broker is complete absurdity. What Harper's done is taken that one-sided, clear one-sided Canadian support for Israel to a whole new level, to a whole new level of extreme. And to some extent, part of, I think, Harper's extremeness, and certainly with regards to cutting off aid money or the spigot to groups like Kairos and others, it's partly a reaction to the growing grassroots opposition to Israeli policy in Canada. At some level, the extreme position of the Harper government is a reaction to positive developments taking place in the grassroots.
So you would say it's sort of indicative of a shifting position in amongst the population. In talking about that, last week or last weekend, Robert Fowler, diplomat, who Liberal Party supporter and a diplomat, somebody who was kidnapped in some sort of situation in Africa. It's kind of murky. Nobody knows exactly what happened there. But he made an interesting speech where he criticized both the Liberals and the Conservatives of pandering to ethnic votes, and in particular their position on Israel being so one-sided and going against, a more neutral position that Canada used to have. You talked about what Canada's position used to be, and there might be a question on that, but what I found interesting, and I wanted to hear your comments on this, is he didn't get pilloried in the press. I mean, normally when somebody sticks their head up and says something like that, the next day there's editorials demanding apologies, resignations, and everything else. But on this one, it seemed that the press didn't want to talk about it. They didn't even quote him properly in most of the mainstream press. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, first of all, Robert Fowler is probably the person most responsible for the 1993 Somalia cover-up. He was the second in charge of the Department of Defense during that cover-up. So he is somebody clearly from the establishment, from the foreign policy establishment, and more recently he was kidnapped when it appeared he was shilling for a Canadian mining company in Niger, which has largely gone unreported in the Canadian media. So Fowler's criticism, I think, first of all, on the media front, the Globe and Mail's response to, it was pretty amazing what the Globe and Mail published. They basically cut out all of what Fowler said about pro-Israel position being motivated by getting Jewish votes. They basically cut out his whole criticism about pro-Israel. So it appeared on the website, but in the actual newspaper, it was totally cut out. It was clearly some editor took hold of that copy and changed it for very clear political reasons. More generally about what Fowler is saying, I disagree that I don't believe that the Harper government's running around taking these extreme positions as a way to capture Jewish votes. If you look at the last census in 2006, the Jewish community was defined as the 25th largest ethnic group in the country. There's only a handful of ridings in the country where there's any significant number of Jews. I think it's 1.3% of the population is Jewish. So the idea it's about just getting votes from the Jewish community, it doesn't make any sense. Also, if you look at historically, the Christian and Trudeau governments, which were more willing to be critical of Israel, still very pro-Israel governments, but more willing to be critical of Israel, they got many more votes from the Jewish community, from Canada's Jewish community, than did the Mulroney or Harper governments, which were more sympathetic towards Israel. So my feeling about the reason for why Canada is so pro-Israel and why Harper is so pro-Israel specifically is it's the power of empire. I think it's about a vision of Israel as an outpost of Western imperialism in the heart of the oil-producing Middle East, as a U.S. military base, if you like. That's the long-standing. That goes back to Canada's role in the United Nations Partition Plan in 1947. Canadian officials' internal memos discussed that. That continues an internal memo from Pearson in 1952, making the same case. and it goes on throughout the years. I think with the Harper government also, there's an element of pandering to its right-wing evangelical base, which often is very pro-Israel, very pro-Zionist, has this idea that the Jews need to return to the Middle East for the second coming of Jesus and other sort of absurd, bizarre biblical prophecies being fulfilled through the Zionist movement. So I think Harper is partly pandering to his base on an issue that doesn't cost him that much domestically. So they're very weary about taking on the issue of abortion or undermining abortion in Canada because there is obviously such strong support in this country for a woman's right to choose. But you know, that's an issue, of course, that his evangelical base would like to see Harper take on. But on foreign policy, I think they're more able to get away with taking these extreme pro-Israel positions with fairly limited political cost to the Harper government. So I really think the explanation for Harper's position is his vision of U.S. empire in the heart of the oil-producing Middle East, as well as, you know, sort of this Christian Zionist kind of position.
Well, that's really interesting. Could you? I want to go back to the other point. Why do you think you talked about the Globe the way they reported it? The Star did the same thing. The Star was very generic. They said he was critical for pandering to ethnic votes, but they never reported his quotes about on the State of Israel on the question of Israeli foreign policy, and. And then there was no reaction afterwards. I mean, it was sort of like the next day they wanted to bury it. Assuming that Fowler is a well-connected person with intelligence agencies and people who make power decisions in North America, he didn't just say that. He didn't just say that in a speech just because he felt like it. I mean, he must have vetted it with a bunch of people.
Oh, I would guess that for sure. Fowler is not. Yeah, he's a serious foreign policy establishment player, and he wouldn't make this criticism without, you know, first of all, being aware of the potential sort of backlash, and secondly, with, you know, a clear political objective in mind. And I think the political objective is one of the political objectives right now with Canada and the U.S. putting some pressure. Or sort of being a little bit weary of what the Netanyahu government is doing in terms of building more and more settlements in East Jerusalem, is that they're trying to, Canada and the U.S. are trying to build a coalition of countries, including some Arab countries, to prepare for a U.S.-Israeli attack against Iran. And to some extent, these settlements and this sort of really aggressive policy of expansion by the Netanyahu government in terms of settlements makes Washington's life a little bit more difficult in terms of getting different Arab countries on board for its plan to go at Iran. So I think that's I don't think someone like Robert Fowler he's not making these criticisms because he's you know, some defender of the Palestinian cause or you know, really cares about Palestinian human rights. He's doing, I think, more from a sort of geostrategic or, you know, this, in some ways, the Harper government's extremeness sort of undermines Canada's influence a little bit in the world. And he's somebody who, you know, he believes in Canadian power. And he's, so I think that's probably the motivation of Fowler.
Well, that's interesting because it shows the sort of contradictions that they're all faced with in the Middle East. I guess the fact that the Palestinians don't want to go away is creating all sorts of political problems for the West in dealing in the Middle East. But I just wanted to go back to a point you made it earlier, too, is that you said the ground was shifting in Canada in terms of understanding the oppression of the Palestinians. You've been touring across the country. You've been talking to people. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more in terms of your own personal experiences on this?
Well, in terms of my own personal experiences, I think that even if you look at the way different pro-Israel groups have dealt with some of the talks I've been giving, they're much less aggressive than they may be in the past, or what many people thought they'd been like in the past. But I think the more important point than all just the personal experiences I've had is that the change in progressive thoughts on the issue is really profound. So in the book and in my presentation, I have this quote from Tommy Douglas in 1975 where he goes to the Detroit Labor Federation, and he makes this really pro-Israel position, saying that if anyone who criticizes Israel, it's because how well Israel treats its workers. Today, Jack Layton, for all Jack Layton's problems on Israel and on many other issues, Jack Layton would never go to Israel and make a similar type comment. And I think it's because there's been such a change in opinion among progressives in this country. Unions that 3 decades ago were calling for the Canadian government to enact legislation to block a boycott campaign by Canadian companies, a boycott campaign spurred by Arab countries to demand Israel return land it stole. 3 decades ago, Canadian unions were pushing the Trudeau government to enact legislation to block Canadian companies from participating in this boycott campaign. 3 decades later, some of those same unions have actually joined the growing boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. So in terms of progressive opinion in this country, you've seen a sea change on the issue. And it's far from where it needs to be, but there's been significant improvements. And I think the left political culture in this country now is quite hostile to Israel's continued expansionism, Israel's belligerence in the region. And that's only because of the different activist work that, you know, innumerable number of people have been taking on for the past years or even decades. So I think we should, it's a long way to go. I think we should be very, take heart in the fact that there's been a significant improvement.
Well, I think we've been seeing a lot of similar things here in the interviews we've been doing and the events we've been holding. Eves, I know you've got this big tour and you've got to get going. So I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to be here. And where are some of the places people can get your book right now besides the upcoming event in Hamilton?
Well, the best place is to get it online, turning.ca. I've asked Turning the Tide bookstore in Saskatoon, you can buy it online. I've asked Chapters Indigo, I've asked Fernwood to not sell it at Chapters Indigo Kohl's because of the boycott campaign against that company for its role in supporting Israeli militarism. And people in Hamilton should, if they can come out, if people can come out of that event, it'd be great to see people.
Okay, well, Eves, on behalf of Peter and myself, we'd like to thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you in Hamilton, and we'll be providing information about where people can come to see you and also to get your book. So thanks once again for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll
see
you. Thanks, Eve. Bye-bye.